Hello and welcome to a new episode of Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock and Roll. First episode of the year and first episode after we have decided to switch from a German-speaking podcast to an English-speaking podcast. We have done some English-speaking episodes in the past among our now more than 320 episodes, but we decided to give it a try and switch to English. And with we, I mean four co-hosts, which is Michael, Manu, Jonas, and I, Alex. So first, welcome to all of you guys. Good to have you on board.
Happy New Year. Hello.
Hey, Alex.
Happy New Year.
So as said, we decided to switch to English. We have already recorded a bit more than 320 episodes, I would say 98% in German, but we have received feedback from friends, colleagues, from the industry that the topics that we are discussing here might also be interesting for a bit of a wider audience, a global international audience. And of course, switching to English also gives us the possibility to invite more interesting guests from an international stage. So as said, we said we give it a try. From now on, all episodes in English. What we decided to do, or what we plan to do, was to give a quick introduction of who we are, since it might be that we have a couple of new listeners starting with this episode. So I would maybe just go around here. Who wants to start? Michael, do you want to start? Maybe two sentences about yourself, giving some background of who you are and which expertise you bring to this podcast.
Yeah, super happy to start. I joined the podcast in June 2019, where we, Alex, actually met and became friends during our PhD studies. I was a PhD researcher back then at the Institute of Information Systems and Digital Business. And blockchain was a super hot topic back then at the Institute, with ample coffee corner conversations among the researchers. Here in the podcast, my focus topics are the integration of cloud ERP and blockchain, since I work at SAP as a principal IT architect. A second focus topic for me is real economy stablecoin, since I was last year heavily engaged in a mandate at the Swiss stablecoin startup that seeks to launch a real economy stablecoin. Yeah, and in addition, whatever topics and guests interest me, I cover them here in the podcast. A few words about my professional roles. I serve as a newly, as of November last year, I serve as a principal IT architect at SAP in its global enterprise architecture and advisory team. And prior to that, I was a senior management consultant at A.T. Kearney's digital practice based out of Zurich. Yeah, and at both professional chapters, I served as a core team member of the respective digital assets and currencies teams, both at SAP and A.T. Kearney. And yeah, I continue to be engaged at the University of St. Gallen as a senior external lecturer and researcher, where I do focus on cloud ERP and blockchain.
So we can actually, the order we can take is the order in which you joined the podcast. So we started the podcast in 2019. In June, I think, Michael, it was a couple of months later that you joined. I think it was early 2020. And I think then, Jonas, you joined the podcast. I'm not sure when this was. Maybe you can remember.
Yeah, I think it was in the middle of 2020. So I've seen, we did a podcast episode where I was a guest in April 2020. So it has, you know, it was definitely after that, obviously. And yeah, I was also a PhD researcher back in the days at the University of Bayreuth, looked a lot into stablecoins, CBDCs. And this is also why we met. And I remember, Alex, that I reached out to you, because there were not a lot of people in this space. So yeah, we thought, okay, it makes sense to group together. In this podcast, I cover a few different topics. One, definitely CBDCs. I'm following these developments now for 7-8 years. Also wrote my PhD thesis around CBDCs. Look a lot into digital identity topics, also because I'm currently running a startup in this space. I'm truly fascinated by Bitcoin as well. And yeah, in my besides my podcast life here in my professional roles, I have a few different hats on. So one is, I'm currently COO of Etonic, which is a consulting company around blockchain-based payments and digital identity. I'm then, as I said, also running a startup, Hakata, on the topic of digital identity. And I'm also the chairman of the Digital Euro Association, which is basically a think tank around tokenized money. And besides that, also doing some lecturing activities, I think, as we all four do.
Yeah, and then last but not least, and I think the strategy was similar, first inviting him as a guest and then asking him if he wants to join the podcast. Manu, I'm not sure when that was. I think a little bit after Jonas.
A little bit after Jonas, but also on digital money topics. So this is exactly where I come from. Since 2014, I've been very interested in the current monetary system and understanding how money actually works and credit creation and money creation and all this. And through that analysis, then also came to digital money and digital currencies. And I think I met Jonas on a conference that I organized. And then a couple of months later, he introduced me to you, Alex, and I got to the podcast. And since then, which is probably now 3 to 4 years back, have been joining the podcast from time to time. And since 2022, I think, I'm part of the core team, or 2023, I don't actually recall. Core team means us four, talking about digital money and digital assets innovation with a focus on adoption in the traditional financial sector, but clearly also crypto and especially Bitcoin play a large role in this podcast. And yeah, I also share similar background as you guys, but did not do a PhD. So the only one who has opted out of that idea, I actually also had it, but then decided to start the professional career at FactSet after having spent some time at Philipp Sandner's Frankfurt School, where we also met Jonas. And then rejoined EY for a digital assets and money consulting role. So rejoined the whole topic after I, let's say, dropped it for 2 years professionally, but still worked on some articles with you, Jonas and Alex. And then after EY, I joined Deutsche Bank, and I'm now there responsible for 3 years already for digital money innovation and cross-border payments innovation in general as a market manager for that topic. Next to that, do that podcast, but very importantly, in a private manner, right? And I think this is also something that we do want to highlight here as well. But before that, handing maybe over to you, Alex, again, for also a quick intro, because you have not done that yet.
Yes, I'm happy to do that. So my name is Alex. I started this podcast in June 2019. You've already heard a little bit about the history now of other people joining. I'm currently working at DWS. That's the asset manager of Deutsche Bank. I'm working there on digital product strategy topics. Before that, I was at Deutsche Bank, also worked together a bit with Manuel. I was at the European Central Bank as a consultant, and I'm still a lecturer at different universities, first and foremost in the University of St. Gallen, where I'm basically giving the bachelor intro course into blockchain and money. And I started professionally in 2020 with that topic, but also before that at the ECB and during my PhD at the University of St. Gallen, I was very interested. I did some research on digital money in particular, so we all have a bit of a digital money angle here. But Manu already mentioned it. We are definitely talking about cryptocurrencies here. We are talking about digital assets or tokenized assets as well. I would say the niche that we are filling is mainly kind of a the focus that we have is mainly a B2B focus. And I think this is maybe something that separates this podcast from other podcasts. And that was also one reason why we decided to switch to English, because we, at least to the best of our knowledge, do not see a lot of podcasts in the digital asset space that cover the B2B topic or view or angle at the European level. So our focus will remain very much on Europe. We, of course, are going to discuss other topics as well. But this podcast is supposed to become a good source of information of what happens in Europe in the B2B institutional space.
And clearly also with different flavors of each of us, as we described and explained, right? So I try to bring into the podcast the stuff around blockchain adoption in TradFi and payments and assets. So stuff like Agora, tokenized deposits, all this kind of stuff, digital money from the central banks or retail and wholesale CBDC. Whereas others might have more of a crypto focus. So talking about Bitcoin adoption. We also have another focus, and we hope to continue that with Stefan from Zülke on DeFi So you're going to hear various different topics presented or represented by the different co-hosts.
Yes, and you already mentioned something very important. All the views expressed in this podcast are solely those of us privately and do not represent anything that our employers might say. So this is a private endeavor here, which is important. I would suggest that we now start into this episode because it's not an episode dedicated to us or an introduction of this podcast, but an episode dedicated to an outlook and our predictions for the year 2025. So it's a bit of a special episode. We are going to share our predictions today with you. First, we have a couple of internal topics that we want to introduce you to. So what are we planning to do in the podcast in the coming year? And then, of course, we have a couple of market and price predictions for you as well. So maybe handing over to Michael for the internal outlook 2025.
Exactly. This section is supposed to give you an understanding of we as co-hosts seek to cover this running year 2025 in terms of topics, but also in terms of professionalizing this podcast. Let's start with proposing some thoughts we have individually as co-hosts on what topics to specifically cover. Jonas, if you may, I hand over to you.
Yeah, so I think, you know, as every year, we also have to be pretty flexible on what we cover, right? Because so many new developments will come up that we want and have to cover. But besides that, I will focus on two things. One is a discussion of permissionless versus permission blockchains, because I think this is still of highest importance to discuss this matter, like where are permission blockchains better, where are permissionless blockchains better. I think 2024 was definitely the year with a lot of publications around this. And I think 2025 can be the year to make sense of all these publications, to bring them together, and also to see how we can bring the space forward to really streamlining all these different thoughts on permissionless versus permission blockchains that are out there after the papers. And secondly, I also want to go
maybe
a little bit...
Maybe on the first one, Jonas, I can help you cover that topic to a certain extent because Fabian Scher from the University of Basel has written a really nice paper on to what extent permissionless platforms can be used as a basis for our financial market. So I've read that over the holidays. It was a really nice read, and I will try to reach out to him and see if we can win him as a guest here. He has written that paper for the European Commission, so also, like, let's say, some nice attention for this paper, and that would be maybe one episode that falls into that category.
Definitely, and that was definitely a very good paper from last year. There was also one from Zülke and Stefan on this topic. There are also more, but yeah, I think this would be the year to really go a little bit deeper on this topic. And secondly, I also want to come back a little bit more to the basics in a sense of, you know, we know that last year was definitely a year of Bitcoin. A lot of new people entered the space, and to also zoom out a little to say, to help them and say, hey, look, how do you store specific crypto assets? You know, what is mining? You know, all of that. So of course, we don't want to make this like and start a podcast, right? So we will find a good mix. But I would also like to bring in occasionally very relevant, very practical topics, but that are rather, you know, for the beginners around Bitcoin and crypto.
Great. Looking forward to that. So then, Manu, how about you?
I can only echo what Jonas has said. We try to be flexible. So whatever comes up, as we clearly don't know what the year will bring, we will discuss. However, I will keep up with the focus on tokenization of money. So tokenized deposits, what is happening in the wholesale CBDC front, and the combination of the two, for example, with regards to Project Agora, the RLN concepts, all this kind of stuff that is talking about a new, you know, or using new rails for moving money in the way that we currently also move it by combining commercial bank money and central bank money, but using blockchain technology. Then clearly also the developments around retail central bank digital currencies, and especially the digital euro, as I'm quite close to that. And what I also still want to cover to some extent is the tokenization of securities. We've had already plenty of episodes in the past in German on that, also on a regulatory front. And I hope to keep up the work on that as well to provide additional overview of what is happening in that front in Europe, especially with the hopeful uptake of the DLT pilot regime.
Yeah, maybe I can chime in there because my point's actually very similar to yours. When you said tokenization of money, I would pick stablecoins as an example of that. That is definitely going to be one of my focus points. Maybe even euro stablecoins, since I think that's also something that's underrepresented in the international podcast space. It's an interesting market that now, due to the markets and crypto assets regulation, is hopefully going to grow quickly. And since professionally, I'm also dealing with that topic. So I'm currently a chairman of the board of AllUnity. That's a startup that has been founded in Frankfurt by three partners, Galaxy Digital, Flow Traders, and DWS. And it's hopefully going to issue a euro stablecoin next year. So I'm very much involved professionally in that topic. So that's something I also want to bring to that podcast. And then you also mentioned tokenization of securities, Manu, and that's also something I decided to dive a bit deeper into this year, in particular with that asset management angle. And from an asset manager's point of view, tokenization usually means either you are investing into tokenized securities as part of your funds that you have or mandates, or you are issuing funds that are tokenized. And these are things that I wanted to dig a bit deeper. We had a really good episode in English, so I can bring it up here. Manu, you did that together with Stefan and Animoy. What was his name? Martin Quenzel?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so that was a really, really good episode. If you're interested in that topic, we will put that into the show notes. And now one last point, Michael, before I play it back to you. When I look at the topics here, at our topics, it feels a bit like we are never talking about cryptocurrencies. I feel this is a bit underrepresented here, even though actually that's one of the main topics here of this podcast. So actually almost every episode, we are, of course, talking about Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the crypto space. So I just wanted to bring that up quickly.
And I think, Alex, that we have seen in our last episode, when we looked back in 2024, our key events for 2024 were all Bitcoin related, right? So in the end, I know we will end up talking about Bitcoin, crypto generally, really a lot, and that's also what we want to do. But I think this overview gives you a good feeling on which topics we cover. And again, as Alex said, always with some kind of B2B perspective, and not tell you about the newest crypto meme coin you should trade tomorrow to get rich. That's definitely not what you can expect from this and should expect from this podcast.
I think what we just presented represents the key flavors or the key topics of interest that we continue to look in. But two requirements will hold this year. One is we stay flexible in that if a new ETF, a spot ETF for whatever cryptocurrency is launched, of course, we report about it. And the second key requirement we will continue to serve, or which will continue to hold true, is that we, of course, cover important Bitcoin and Ethereum developments. And for selected altcoins and selected developments, of course, we cover them too. So to proceed, maybe I also just present the two key flavors or key perspective I seek to bring into the podcast in 2025. One is the integration of cloud ERP and blockchain. So I think 2024 was a major year for institutional adoption. And for this institutional adoption to continue, it's important that business processes on the one hand and blockchains on the other hand continue to learn to speak with each other or to each other. And to do so, to facilitate or process coins or tokens in business processes of contemporary large organizations, the business software that these organizations use, that is enterprise resource planning, needs to be able to process coins and tokens. And my new role at SAP as IT architect perfectly allows to investigate exactly this question. A second topic I'm really interested in is real economy stablecoins. So the applications of stablecoins in the real economy as means of payment in retail stores, in distinction to the financial economy stablecoins that are used as a bridging device from the real economy or from the traditional financial system into the crypto financial system. And examples for that would be DCJPY in Japan or the Digital Swiss Franc in Switzerland, where it was happy to contribute to last year. So these are the two topics I will specifically focus on this year. Another aspect of what we seek to do internally here at Bitcoin Fiat and Rock and Roll is our partnerships and sponsoring. So this podcast is a hobby for us. We all, as introduced in the beginning, have full-time jobs in the traditional financial sector, in startups, me at a business software, enterprise software company. Nevertheless, we want to grow this podcast. We want to become more professional. And this comes with costs, and we want to cover these costs. To do so, partnerships and sponsoring is necessary. So by no means here we seek to generate major profits. The only thing we seek to become is more professional and to cover these costs. So if you think that's a worthwhile goal, a worthwhile pursuit, just contact us if you're interested and if you like the idea of this podcast becoming more professional. Yeah, and with that, I think we can conclude this section of our internal outlook and move on to our external outlook. Jonas will guide us through that section.
Yeah, so this is, I think, one of the favorite parts, and I'm happy to moderate this. So what we are doing now is to really look at what we expect for 2025. And we are very famous for our predictions that are always, we try to be, you know, are good to measure. And also we try to be bold. So, you know, interpret them maybe with a little bit of caution. And again, it's our private views here, which is very important to stress, not that that said tomorrow, like Deutsche Bank is saying X or Y or DWS. That's not what we want to do. But still, what everybody of us has done is two predictions for 2025, what we expect from this year, again, with a focus on measurable and bold predictions. And what we always do at the end of the year is we basically count, you know, which predictions were correct and, you know, basically allocate beers to the ones that basically really appeared. That's always a highlight at the end of the year. So this means there is a very strong incentive to be right with the predictions, because it's about beers that we, you know, we bet here or we focus on. Yeah, so this just is a little bit of background to this. And yeah, I'm now really excited to hear your bold predictions for this year. And yeah, maybe Manu, do you want to start with your predictions for 2025? Or maybe with your first prediction for 2025?
In the prelude of this episode, I felt like you guys were already making jokes that I'm not presenting bold and concrete predictions. Let's see whether that holds true. I don't think so. So let's see. My first one is regarding the digital euro. So I do not expect too much happening this year on the political front. So as we all know, the ECB is working on this digital euro project, but it cannot go live without the European legislation. And that European legislation has been stalling in 2024 due to the election. And I do not expect too much progress on this front. Why? Because the commissioner, or rapporteur, as they call it, has now changed from Stefan Berger to a new rapporteur, Rojas, he's called, a Spaniard who is quite skeptical on the digital euro. So my prediction is that the EU legislation for the digital euro will not come into place in 2025. And there will therefore be no party, or not therefore, but there will be no party that steps up as a strong proponent of the digital euro in parliament, right? So this year will ultimately end with a lot of unclarity where the digital euro project will head to in 2026. But the ECB will nevertheless start the development of a digital euro prototype in a new phase that lasts 1 year to hope for a final legislation in 2026. So long story short, no update on the legislation. However, ECB will push ahead and start to build the prototype, even though there is no legislation in 2025.
So what you basically did, Manuel, is you've seen that my prediction for last year was correct when I said that this will not be, you know, come into place in 2024, and you just copy it for 2025 and want to win a beer. Is this your strategy?
No, this is not the strategy.
But, so maybe you can just explain quickly what exactly needs to happen before we have this legislation. Like, how does this process look like? How cumbersome is it?
Yeah, it is cumbersome. So the European Commission has proposed their version of a legislation already in June 2023. And the parliament is now up to write a commentary on this. This has happened in 2024 ultimately already at the end of 2023, to be precise, but it wasn't taken forward. So there was no decision in the parliament, there was no discussion in the parliament on that proposal, and hence it was stalled completely. Now with the new parliament, the whole situation or the whole negotiation might start from scratch, actually, right? And this will happen this year, but I don't expect that there's going to be lots of progress. And that's why it's not a copy of Jonas's one, right? But it's adapting to the current situation where there's a new rapporteur that is very skeptical on the digital euro. And therefore, I don't expect anything will happen.
And you, we of course need this legislation before the digital euro can go live. Wasn't it even the case that the ECB had defined these different phases and they said, in order to start phase X, we need the, let's say, approval from the legislative approval. And now this is not supposed to come. So did they change their phases now? Because you said they would push ahead and still...
Yeah, so that's a very good point, actually. So you are absolutely right. They have the different phases. They started with a two-year investigation phase that lasted until November 2023. Then the preparation, another two-year phase, the preparation phase was kicked off. Again, 2 years. 1 year has now passed, and one additional year will come until November 2025. And then they wanted, because they hoped for a European legislation to be final, they wanted to go ahead and actually decide to build and issue a digital euro. I don't think they can, or actually I don't only think so, but that is a fact. They cannot decide to build a digital euro without the European legislation. However, I do expect, and this is part of my projection, my thesis, I do expect that they will continue to build the digital euro. Right. So without a legislation, because they are already in quite advanced talks with the private sector to build parts of the digital euro solutions. And I don't think they can put a hold on that until they finally have a legislation. So you could even say it's a very bold statement to say they will continue to build the product without the European legislation in place.
And maybe just to add to that, Manu, is that besides that, there is also a third stakeholder, which is the European Council, which makes things even more complicated, plus the European Correct. Commission that has new staff now in place. So this is two further facts which say, hey, it's for me also very unlikely to get this done in 2025.
Okay, nice prediction.
All right, let's go. Nice one, Manuel, and it's measurable. So we made progress. So let's go to the next one. And maybe Alex, do you want to share your first prediction with us?
Yes. So I have a bold prediction as my first one. My prediction is that Trump and Musk are breaking up in 2025. I believe these two egos are too big for them to work together long term. And this might not sound like a crypto prediction, but I believe this could have huge repercussions for the crypto market. So maybe first, why do I think that they break up? I think currently they need each other. Of course, Trump needed the money. Musk wants to have the influence. He's, of course, with all his businesses strongly intertwined or deeply intertwined with a US state. But I'm not sure whether their interests are really aligned in the long run. So for instance, they are both running a competing social media platform, Trump with Truth Social and Musk with X, formerly Twitter. Trump is, for instance, very skeptical of climate change, while Tesla's mission is to accelerate the transition to a sustainable environment. And there are a couple of reasons why I believe those two are not going to work together long term. So what would be the, let's say, implications for the crypto market? I mean, I'm expecting Musk to completely fail or get even close to his promised saving in this new Department of Government Efficiency. I mean, he has like thrown out numbers again that are literally impossible to reach. So I think he is going to fail there. So the Doge, this Department of Government Efficiency, Doge is going to fail. That gives Trump a reason to get rid of him. if this government department fails, then also the currency is going to fail. Musk is, let's say, breaking up with Trump. So I believe that Dogecoin is going to underperform Bitcoin significantly in 2025 by at least 30%. What I also expect, maybe last point, is that there will not be an open fight. I think this will be relatively silently, but Musk is just going to disappear from Trump's inner circle, and this will heavily hit Dogecoin in 2025.
So, Alex, as a resident now here in Singapore, I must say in Singaporean Singlish, where the crypto lie? Where's the crypto? Again, this was my comment as well. You did a very nice prediction of politics, but then the bottom line is that Doge will underperform Bitcoin. Is that what I got out of your long statement?
Well, but I mean, my prediction includes Trump and Musk breaking up. I mean, it's a political / crypto prediction. We all know that at least since the election in the US, we can definitely not take apart politics and crypto. So I think it's totally fair to have a politics / crypto prediction given what has happened in the US over the last months.
Okay. I would have expected some Bitcoin reserve tweak or whatever, but all right.
I'm pretty sure that the others are going to bring up the Bitcoin reserve. So,
well, then Doge will underperform Bitcoin, huh?
Doge will underperform Bitcoin. The two will break up. And Alex really likes to make Musk predictions, right? Because I remember last year you also had one with X and Twitter.
True, yeah.
So, yeah, let's see what you bring next year.
Which completely failed.
Which you could, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you want to have a safe bet with this one. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, let's turn to Michael for your first prediction.
Yeah, Manu, regarding your wish for a reserve prediction, I can certainly help because my first prediction is exactly about that. The prediction is at least one G7 or BRICS nation will establish and announce a strategic Bitcoin reserve. Now, G7 is Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States. BRICS would then be Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. So at least one of these nations will establish and announce such a reserve. Coming to the explanation of the prediction. So as you know, the Trump administration's proposal to establish such a strategic Bitcoin reserve for the United States has sparked widespread debate and speculation last December. And yes, adding Bitcoin to the US Treasury's balance sheet would require considerable political willpower this year once Trump is in power, and also congressional approval. But the mere suggestion by a future US president of such an initiative carries menacing profound implications, because by signaling the possibility of that Bitcoin reserve, the US effectively invite other major nations to at least silently consider a similar move, and kind of an arms race might start which nation starts such a reserve and yeah, to what extent. Another reason is that Bitcoin's limited supply and its emerging role as a digital store of value could then heighten the urgency for nations to now act quickly. So in my opinion, the race is now on for the first major country to integrate Bitcoin into its reserve strategy.
And I mean, to this reserve topic, we think we discussed this in the last news episode, right? There are now a lot of countries really talking about this, right? So most prominently, of course, the US. There are even, you know, bills that, you know, are lying with the regulatory parties in Brazil. There is discussion about Japan, Russia, China. In Germany, at least, that's in the election via the liberals, the FDP. So we do see there is more, definitely momentum for this reserve topic. And I think this could be, I mean, definitely could be a driver if this indeed comes to place. And maybe I add here my prediction, because this is related before we discuss around this. I also had a prediction to the one. Should I bring it now or should we discuss?
Yeah, bring it now. I think it works well here.
It works well, but one quick thought on this. Given that you also mentioned the momentum that currently is there, and I fully agree, is at least one country bold enough, Michi?
It's bold because a political process is behind it, and these political processes take long time. The second reason why it's bold is that it includes the announcement. So if it were my nation, I would do so, but I wouldn't announce it because it just reduces the likelihood that other nations join the arms race for owning a lot of Bitcoin. Yeah, therefore, having this in this year and having the announcement makes it bold, in my opinion.
Manu, I don't like the negative sentiment you're spreading here. You're like criticizing every prediction. I think it's a pretty, pretty bold prediction. I mean, it would be totally nuts if one of the G's, what was it, G7 you said, or BRICS?
Or BRICS. G7 or BRICS, yeah.
Introducing a Bitcoin reserve in 2025. I think that would be totally crazy. And to that point that everyone is now discussing it and announcing it. And Jonas, I agree. I've also read in Russia and in the US, of course, and in Brazil, et cetera, et cetera. It's often that just like one person, like one representative from the parliament is like mentioning it in a discussion. And then in the news, you read Brazil wants to introduce Bitcoin reserve, right? So I'm always a bit skeptical, like how far these discussions really are. And in particular, what would be necessary in order to actually get this done? I mean, just take the US as an example. How long are they discussing a stablecoin bill right now? And a stablecoin bill is something simplistic, extremely simple compared to establishing a Bitcoin reserve in the US. And they are discussing this for years. Of course, things might now change with Trump, but I think the hurdle is bigger than some imagine to introduce something like that.
It's fair, yeah.
And I like the, by the way, the negative sentiment that Manu is bringing in here to make it a little bit more spicy.
Yeah, I want
to
make it spicy. Yeah.
Yes, that's really good.
Make it spicy. No, but I feel you, Alex, fully agree. Yeah.
But I agree. I think it's not bold enough. This is why I add a little bit more boldness to this. Of course, I'm flexible. We are in this podcast, so I'm a little bit more bold now. No, I'm just kidding. But what I basically said is my prediction is that I think three more countries will invest in Bitcoin. Two of them are G20 countries. So, of course, that's a little bit easier.
There
than,
you go.
But it's a little invest, bit easier. It's not. Sorry? It's not building up a Bitcoin reserve. It's just they invest into Bitcoin or they hold Bitcoin.
Yes, correct. I mean, this reserve term, I don't like it, right?
It's not, but it's not really defined, is it?
It's not, exactly. So let me define mine to make it measurable, right? So again, two should be G20 countries and generally three. So it should be two you know, larger countries, one minor country. I would say it can be either investments via sovereign wealth funds or really the governments themselves, like Ministry of Finance. So that's important to consider. So if you think about Norway, Saudi Arabia, you know, who have wealth funds, that's something at least I also consider here. And the vehicle can be both direct Bitcoin invest or also ETFs, but no, let's say, Bitcoin stock things, right? Like Microsoft. So that's something I'm not considering because even for that, we know that Switzerland... Sorry, MicroStrategy, Microsoft, not yet.
Microsoft decided not to add Bitcoin to their balance sheet, right? But is it really investing? Or because, I mean, first, already three G7 countries hold Bitcoin. Is China in the G7? Because it's China, US, and Great Britain, they have already Bitcoin, right?
So out of seizure, though, right? Out of seizure. What? Out of seizure.
Yeah. But that's my question. Yeah. What does investing mean? Is it I simply hold them because...
No. Hear me out. I'm not done, guys. No, what I'm saying is, an example is how El Salvador or Bhutan basically did it. So they... Okay. Invested and they actively invested it. It's not the obfuscated coins because I don't know 50 governments probably hold crypto, right? Exactly,
or mining,
which is not part of a broader strategy. Exactly.
Okay.
So maybe I should have rephrased the wording, but that's really an active thing to also, you know, make a little bit of marketing with that and not under the surface.
That's a bold one.
It's much bolder. But how does it then differ to the strategic? Like reserve.
I just don't like the word, to be honest. I could also say three countries are setting up a Bitcoin strategic reserves, but yeah.
If you deliberately invest, you set up some sort of reserve. I mean, you don't need to back your currency by that as a reserve asset or whatever. Maybe that's the difference.
Well, mining is also the difference. So if you say, I think you wouldn't build up a strategic Bitcoin reserve by mining, you could decide to engage in mining and then you just decide not to sell the Bitcoins like Bhutan does it. But I think they would also not call it a strategic Bitcoin reserve. So I think it's indeed a bit broader. But we can fight about that at the end of the year then when we...
And we will, I'm sure.
When we revisit the predictions.
Nice. So this was the first round of predictions. Let's go to the second round. Who wants to lead to this one?
Let's do the same order.
Yeah, happy to start again. So my second one is... At least 10 banks out of the US, Europe, or Asia will use stablecoins as a new settlement method for cross-border payment. So hear me out, 10 banks. Circle, USDC, or Paxos Global Dollar, which is the US dollar denominated stablecoin issued out of Singapore, will be the stablecoins that are used. They will use it predominantly for wholesale settlement, not for retail, however, also offering credit into individual retail wallets. So crediting funds into individual retail wallets. So the retail use case, right? So again, 10 banks, US, Europe, Asia, will use stablecoins for cross-border payments as a settlement asset, predominantly wholesale settlement.
Boom.
Nice. I mean, I've of course heard about that use case. I always wonder, and Manu, I think you're the right person to ask this question. To what extent is it like tech integration work at banks that needs to be done to make that happen? That's my first question. The second question is, to what extent will banks hate that they have to pre-fund anything they do with stablecoins? And do you think these two questions, so tech integration and pre-funding, turns out to be a real, let's say, hurdle for banks?
I mean, both are good questions, two good questions. So the first one, tech integration, I mean, many banks now invest and have invested into custody solutions, right? And as long as you include a payments use case in your custody solution, you can actually do it, right? Because where's the difference? You can either build a custody solution simply for, let's say, crypto for corporate, for clients, and therefore offering it as a custody solution only for, let's say, passive use of yourself as a bank, or you can also integrate it into your payment systems and then use the whole infrastructure as the backbone for, well, offering new payment solutions and also settlement solutions for yourself as a bank. And if that is the case, and I do believe that some banks are working on that, and by no means this is Deutsche Bank's view here, this is just a bold prediction. I think there are use cases because in some parts of the world, correspondent banks have actually went out and dropped that area, right? And it's quite hard actually to get into those areas. This is where some wallet providers are now offering solutions. Swift has recently also announced a collaboration with TerraPay exactly on this. So to credit the last mile, for example, into the retail wallet using wallet services also in Africa, for example, M-Pesa and so forth, right? But there's a growing trend into using stablecoins for that, either on the retail side, so to credit the last mile into the retail wallet user, but also potentially, and this is my bold statement, on the wholesale side, where banks would use stablecoins as a settlement asset. So that's the technical part. And what was the other?
Well, it connects well to your last sentence. If they use it as a wholesale settlement, I mean, usually banks are super focused on liquidity efficiency, and they have to pre-fund. I mean, maybe you can quickly explain what it means that they have to pre-fund it, and then why it might be an issue, and if you think it's an issue.
Yeah, it's a good point as well. So pre-funding, why is that required? I mean, you have to first go out of your account-based fiat money into token-based fiat money, into a stablecoin, right? And that is a step that needs to be done in order to use the stablecoin. And this is the concept of pre-funding, because you need to hold the liquidity in that stablecoin, right?
And of course, as soon as you have it in the stablecoin, it's not available in the account-based version and you can't use it, right? While, of course, today 99.9% of your liquidity management is done account-based. So it's a bit of a liquidity silos that you're creating by that.
Absolutely, yeah. But I think some services that will emerge clearly understand that and also provide some efficient on and off ramps, right? What is that? It's basically the pre-funding and defunding in and out of the stablecoin, right? And if you have that, and if that is liquid, if that is a liquid market, so you have market makers that provide liquidity, or you can get the liquidity from the issuer directly, you could actually think about using stablecoins as a new means to move money across borders very, very quickly. Because I think without a doubt, you could say a movement of a stablecoin as a token on a public permissionless blockchain is very, very fast, right? When you compare it to settlement of other cross-border payment solutions like correspondent banking. And hence, I think for some corridors, especially where correspondent banking has either opted out or where there's lots of delay because the banks that process these currencies are very inefficient and so forth, I would see those use cases to emerge. But again, I want to make a bold statement and say 10 banks. I don't really believe it, but I want to be bold and hence say 10.
It is bold. All right. Nice. Alex, should we go to your next one?
Yeah, I think I was second. So my second prediction is that the meme coin hype is going to end in 2025. I think meme coins will suffer the same fate as NFTs. In my opinion, meme coins have close to no utility yet, at least. And I'm not expecting this to change in 2025. So it's, for me at least, currently a pure gambling, get-rich-quick scheme. And these things usually don't exist very long. So the death of the meme coin cycle in 2025. I thought a bit about how to quantify that. And I checked the numbers yesterday. So currently the market cap of meme coins is around 100 billion, which is almost 3% of the overall market cap, which is already crazy. I'm a bit afraid to bet against this market cap becoming smaller, because if we enter a real crypto summer now, this might, of course, also pull up the meme coins. But I'm at least predicting that we will go down from these 3% share of overall market cap. Will be closer to 2%, or let's say 2%, at the end of 2025. And I also believe that there will be close to no new meme coins that enter, let's say, the top 50 or so, or have a market cap of more than 100 million. So we can think about how to measure that. So I think there will be no significant, or very, very few significant new meme coins. So completely different to what we have seen in 2024. I've checked there are currently 51 meme coins that have a market cap of more than 100 million. I would say I didn't count it, but I would say probably 48 or 47 of them didn't exist or were completely irrelevant before 2024. So of these top 50s, almost all of them, maybe besides Doge, and I guess Shiba Inu is also a bit older, they all came up in 2024. And this is going to end in 2025. I expect close to no new coin to enter these top 50 and reach a 100 million market cap.
I really hope for the market that your prediction is right, Alex. Nice, but really good one, really reasonable, and yeah.
Yeah, sounds good. I was searching for a post on that because I saw that Fartcoin actually has a much higher market cap than like a lot of small caps in the US combined. Here I found it. With a market cap of 1.4 billion, Fartcoin is now worth more than 939 companies in the Russell 3000 index. Imagine
crazy.
That. It's crazy. It's ludicrous. Yeah. So I hope the market to go into your direction. Yeah.
Yeah. And you will hear us not, you know, very often talk about Fartcoin or any other meme coins in this podcast. So
yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
Thanks for this.
Good.
Alex, a really good one. Michael, do you want to share your third one, your second one with us?
Sure. So I stay loyal to the first term of our label, Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock and Roll. I also stay in the realm of Bitcoin adoption, but now move from nation states to corporations. The prediction is at least one Magnificent Seven company beyond Tesla will add Bitcoin to its balance sheet. So these Magnificent Seven are Apple, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Nvidia, Tesla, and Meta. The first reason for this prediction is that together they hold over 600 billion in cash reserves, offering them really significant flexibility to allocate at least a small portion of their capital to Bitcoin. And the second reason for this prediction is that the US Financial Accounting Standards Board, or FASB, has introduced fair value accounting rules for cryptocurrencies as of December 15 for 2025 and the years beyond. And these new standards require companies to report their crypto holdings, such as Bitcoin, at fair market value, capturing both gains and losses from market fluctuations in real time. So with the enhanced accounting framework I just talked about and increasing regulatory clarity, I think it's plausible that one of these tech giants beyond Tesla, who already did so, will add Bitcoin to its balance sheet.
I'm really curious to discuss later the Bitcoin price prediction, because if Michael or my prediction really come into place, we will see very high Bitcoin prices.
It would be not consistent if you're not at least at 200K with your predictions. Yeah.
I will be consistent.
Cool, but nice one. I remember, I think I had one like 3 or 4 years ago on a similar topic where I was a little bit too early, so a few years, but this year definitely more realistic, but I think still very bold. So yeah, let's see if you win a beer with that or not end of the year.
Yeah, in particular bold, as one of them is already out. Microsoft's investors have rejected this proposition. So Microsoft already out. Let's hope for the other ones.
All right, then let me also go to my last prediction. And I couldn't decide if I want to take a safer one or bold one. I now was inspired by Manuel, so I take the bold one. My prediction is that, and everybody's nodding, so I did the right choice. So what I basically said is that 5 further crypto assets will be launched as ETFs in the USA. So it's not perfect framing, but what I mean is that there will not be 5 more crypto ETFs, but 5 more crypto assets launched as ETFs. So today we do have Bitcoin and ETH as ETFs in the US. And I say end of 2025, we have 5 more. And I even want to be more precise here. I think it will be Solana, XRP, Litecoin, Dogecoin, and another one. So, you know, you never know. So I think this is also a bold one. I know that normally takes 240 days from filing the registration to get approval. So I think this is realistic after inauguration in August. Yeah, it's bold, but let's see.
That's really bold. I would have said it's already bold to say 3 and including Doge. I can't imagine an ETF on a meme coin. No. That would be next level.
And also, I find it so interesting that you also picked Litecoin probably for the market cap. Because
no, Litecoin, there is already one application filed. And so this is for me an obvious choice.
This is just a miracle for me that this still exists or what it does, or I don't understand. Yeah. Litecoin.
Yeah, but, me too. Sorry, I wouldn't trade any of these 5. And I'm also not saying this is like, you know, very good for all of these. But yeah, let's see. It would be a signal.
One other crypto OG in the ETF space, Litecoin.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. So
interesting.
I guess this is thanks for sharing your perspective, your 2 very bullish and measurable ones. So perfect. And I think now should we directly go into the Bitcoin price predictions?
Yeah, we can do so.
Okay, cool. So yeah, basically easy task. So we, you know, are always shy in giving out predictions, as you know, all people with academic background. This is why we predict the Bitcoin price for end of the year, and also if you have prepared it for the highest price and the lowest price. So I think, does actually anybody has the current Bitcoin price? Because I didn't check like a few minutes back, but we are below 100k obviously, but that's
close
maybe
to 100k. It's 96,450.
Okay, 96,400 approximately. And yeah, so let's maybe start. Who wants to start? Alex, do you want to start?
I can start. I mean, I started last year with a proper quantitative approach to predicting the Bitcoin price, which totally failed. So I need to update my model slightly. So last year I said I'm simply assuming the Bitcoin price following a random walk, which means the expected price tomorrow is the price today, which would in this case now be this $96,400. But I said maybe I should adapt the model a bit and add a drift to this random walk model. So what I'm doing now is basically saying I'm adding the average growth rate to that random walk and say it's not going to be the price of today, but it's going to be the price of today plus the average growth rate.
Over now, how many years?
Yeah, the problem is now the average growth rate is pretty volatile depending on which time you're looking at. So just to give you an example now, from 2023 until today, it's 110% annually. If I say I go to 2022 until today, it's 15% annually. And even 2018 to today, it's 27% annually. But 2017 to today, it's 72% annually. So it's still going to be a bit random. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use the growth rate that I see, like the average of all these intervals that I'm seeing here, which is, I would say, roughly 60%. So I'm giving it a 60% annual growth rate, which means my prediction is going to be 160K for the end of 2025. And the high and the low is, I would also take the growth rates here and would say the top is going to be just shy of 200K and the low is going to be, let's say, 92K. So whatever was the low until now. I think it's not going to go 92. Any lower.
Wow, okay.
It's not going to go any lower than what we have seen already. And today is the 3rd of January.
Bold. Nice bold, one, bold, Alex. Bold.
Well, it's really purely model-based. No opinions, no of emotions, course. Purely model.
That's tested everything.
Yeah.
Academic rigor we need. Michael, do you want to go next?
Sure.
So, after your success last year, so...
Yeah. So from my perspective, no modeling is involved, but a mere opinion, my opinion, is that crypto bull market will persist through 2025, reaching its first peak in the first quarter. So at the cycle's apex in Q1, I project Bitcoin to be valued at a new all-time high around $180,000. Following this first peak, I anticipate a 30% retracement in Bitcoin down to a yearly bottom of $125,000. I assume only 30% of a drawback, as the 70% or 80% drawbacks we have seen in cycles past are unlikely in 2025, because there is more of a buffer from institutional inflows in the sector by now. And these institutional investors are strong hands. I don't think that they leave as fast as potentially weak retail hands. But then, however, recovery is likely in the fall, with Bitcoin regaining momentum and reclaiming its previous all-time highs that we will observe in 2025, and then ending the year at $170,000. The boosting factors that make me so... Jonas?
So it was 170K was the end price, and what was up and down again? The highest and the lowest?
Highest 180K, lowest 125K.
That's very bold.
So this means today is basically the lowest price then, right? So it increases. Yeah. Okay, got it. Okay.
And the factors that make me so bullish is that if you look historically, when we saw gold ETFs come in, the first year inflows increased dramatically in subsequent years then. And I think we can expect to see that with the Bitcoin ETFs too. And then, of course, in line with my prediction, I anticipate a Bitcoin strategic reserve in the US or another G7 country or BRICS country, which will boost the price as well.
Coming back to the 125 bottom, I don't understand 100%, because that means as from this second, it must always go up and then somehow stopping somewhere and through this year.
At Michael needs an immediate God candle. Oh, and now we lost him.
That was too much.
Too much for him. Yeah, I mean, 125K low, of course, makes no sense given that we are currently at 96,400. But maybe when he comes back, we can clarify that. And maybe Jonas, you can give us your prediction first.
Yes, go ahead with mine. I was actually a little bit surprised about Michael's one. I think it's pretty bearish given his expectations. I mean, if we do see these Bitcoin reserves and one of the large companies joining, I think we talk, you know, north of what, I don't know, 200 or 300K-ish. But okay, that's how it is. So my estimate, I tried also, you know, to do it academic 2 years back with at least some kind of academic with stock to flow model, had a very nice number last year. And now I just basically show my gut feeling. This is 180K, basically what I think we will see end of the year. I really have no idea about up and down. And I also didn't do a proper analysis. So this is just my gut feeling for end price of 180K for Bitcoin.
And the high and the low?
Yeah, I didn't really go through this, so I don't need the immediate God candle for that. But I can imagine we go a little bit lower than what you said, Alex. So maybe let's say 80K to 200, and then back to 180.
Like we all said, well, I heard a lot of 180 now, right? Michi's up.
Michael said 170 was end quote, and the highest price 70, was 180.
Okay. Yeah, we have now 160. That was me, 170, Michael, and 180. Jonas. Wow. And Michael is back now. Now, Michael, we discussed your low, and with all due respect, I think it's a bit too risky to take 125K as a low, because we are currently at 96,400. So the low is 96,400 now. So you actually cannot go above that, because the low is already defined as 96,400. So it has to be lower than that.
True. Thanks for that good catch.
So we just say that today's price is your yearly low.
Okay. Yeah, good catch. Thanks for that.
So as from today, though, it only goes up.
Only go up. Number go up.
Bold.
Yeah, I mean, until now, the predictions are really bold. Let's see, Manu. Please bring him some rational rationalism.
I'm more rational. I'm more conservative. So I say the current mania and current momentum continues up until 110K. But then in March, the whole, let's say, hype and euphoria breaks down because the Bitcoin reserve, the strategic Bitcoin reserve that Trump is talking about, will not come so easily, as we discussed already. And therefore, the price will go down again and actually go down until we reach 50K. And I try to do some momentum and you know, trading pattern analysis.
Technical analysis, nice.
Yeah, which I cannot do, but still I did it. So it's just guessing. It's ultimately a monkey's throwing darts on a dartboard. But I do believe the bottom will be 50K. So there's strong resistance at the very bottom that we had in the past. And therefore, we will not cross 50K. There's a strong resistance there. Hence, 50K is the bottom. And then in H2, there's going to be increased momentum again, which will lead to a strong rise up until 120K. Right? So we will hit 110K as the, let's say, interim maximum high, then go to 50K. But then at the end, we will end up in 120K.
So a local maximum at 110. But I mean, what you're basically saying is the high will be 120, the low will be 50, and the end of year will be 120.
You could say so, yes. But yeah, the local maximum I wanted to bring
you
in.
You wanted to get the local maximum in there.
Correct.
I really like your technical analysis, and I really like that.
Thank you.
Us with our backgrounds are just, you know,
yeah, please don't
the
trust
price
me
as we
with
do.
Money.
And this is very important to mention. This is no investment advice. So we have this in our disclaimer as well. This is just for dudes that, you know, are a little bit philosophical about, you know, where the Bitcoin price will go and not go. So very important.
But clearly, there's a bottom at 50K. Clearly.
Clearly. No doubt about that.
I already see the price at 35K at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprising. I mean, let's also make that point, right? I wouldn't be surprised if it's at 35K at the end of 2025.
Yeah, random walk theory. Yeah? Anything can happen.
Without drift.
Nice. Okay. So looking at the time, 65 minutes already passed. Thanks a lot. We will get back to that at the end of the year. So we will revisit all the strategies. We will revisit the trash talk here as well, and then see whether we get it again, a champagne for Michi, or a champagne for me, or whoever, or if it's only going to be some beers. But yeah, that was our first episode of the new year. I hope, or we hope, you liked it and you enjoyed the trash talk. Usually, I don't think there's that much trash talk, but from time to time, we also do that. So I hope you liked it. Please support us in this podcast. We have the possibility of you sending us some crypto via the Fountain app if you use that to listen to podcasts.
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin only, yes, of course. Then clearly we are active on social media, where you can follow us on LinkedIn predominantly. And we aim to step up the game on LinkedIn as well this year with the new focus on English language. And yeah, we hope that you also like our English way of talking, because again, this was a German podcast. But we also try to bring out the news in English now. And yeah, thanks for tuning in, and hope to see you and hear you or have you as listeners again in the next episodes.
And maybe just to add one sentence to this, Manuel, because this is the first episode in English, of course. If you are, you know, new to this podcast, listening to that, of course, you know, feel free to tell your friends, colleagues around this podcast. Oh, yeah. And now that it's also available in English, right? Because this is now opens way new doors, way new opportunities. So please support us also here, and yeah, make our audience even larger.
Spread the word.
Spread the word.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure.
It was. Bye-bye. Happy New Year.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.